There is a book out now called Dear God, and it is a collection of actual letters that children have put together and written to God. Somebody got all these letters together and put them in book form, and I wanted to share one of those letters with you this morning. Let's cover the bottom part. Oh, you got it. Okay. This one is from Sarah, age 8. Wonderful letter. It reads, "Dear Miss God, I believe that you are a woman. That is why we have birds and trees and everything beautiful. I love you. Love, Sarah, age 8. Beautiful letter. By itself, just a wonderful thing. But she adds a postscript, a little P.S. at the bottom. She says, very simply, P.S., in case you are not a woman, please don't take it out on me. Boys should not hit girls. I really appreciate this letter for many reasons. One is for its sincerity. It is a little girl who takes a look at the world around her and sees all of the beauty and decides that God must have something to do with all of the beauty in the world, with the birds and the trees and the songs and the wind and all of the great things around her, she says, comes from God. But I appreciate it for another reason, because this is a girl who is willing to take her creativity and her imagination and look at God in a wonderful new way that is meaningful for her, that may be unconventional, but is truly relevant and powerful for her. She uses images of God in ways that impact her. And after all, isn't that something that we all do? Many of us have our own images of God that we have learned as early as being a kid. We've all heard Psalm 23, "The Lord is what? My shepherd." Perhaps we look at God as the great and mighty warrior, or the righteous judge who sits on high and exacts justice upon the earth. The Lord, for many of us, is king who sits on the throne, worthy of our service and our obedience and our praise. And so for all of us, we have ways that we look at God, images of God that are meaningful for us, that are relevant to our own experience, after all, because that's what makes them meaningful. And we realize that this is nothing new, that people have had images of God for thousands of centuries, including the first community of God's people, the ancient Israelites. They had a multitude of images for God. Just listen to the many of them. Exodus 15:3. "The Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name." 2 Samuel 22:2. "The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer. In him will I trust." 1 Chronicles 16:31. "The Lord is king." And then, of course, in Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And the list goes on and on and on. Throughout the scriptures, many ways of looking at God. Perhaps a productive and meaningful study for you sometime will be to go through our Bible and look at the many images that people have given to God. And what you will find is nothing surprising. That the image that a person has for God is peculiar to that person's experience at the time. That the image, the way we look at God, is what is most meaningful for us at a time in our lives. For the Israelites, God was their great warrior in the face of opposition from their neighboring enemies. God was their mighty king in those times of victory, when they had defeated those enemies. God was their shepherd in those times when they needed protection and provision. God was their rock and their fortress and in their deliverer in the midst of danger. when they needed security. And so we come to this amazing passage that was shared earlier from Isaiah 66, verses 10 to 14. Another example of an image for God in a time when people needed it. One verse in particular. As a mother comforts her child, so I will comfort you. You shall be comforted in Jerusalem. As a mother comforts her child, so I will comfort you, God says to God's people. What an amazing image. And what was the particular time that this was written in? This was written in a time when the Israelite nation had just returned from exile. For you see, the Israelite nation had just been humiliatingly defeated and exiled to a far-off country. The Israelites were taken to the nation of Babylon, taken away from their land and their culture, their language, their people, their religion. Everything they knew was theirs, practically stripped of their identity, and moved far away. This was no time for victory for them. You know the stories of Daniel, who was thrown into the lion's den because he refused to act like a Babylonian. And similar stories with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and the fiery furnace. This was not a good time to be an Israelite because they had been defeated, stripped of all they knew, and God seemed so far away. This was no time for victory. Nor was it a time for great sorrow, because this was written in a time when they had returned from that exile. The Persians had conquered the Babylonians, and now the Israelites were free to return to their homeland, only to find that their homes were destroyed, the temple was burned down, and they had to rebuild. So when this was written by the prophet Isaiah, this was no time for victory, because they had suffered a humiliating defeat. And this was no time for great sorrow, because they had returned. This was written for the Israelites in a time of limbo, in a time of confusion. Isaiah 66, this wonderful passage, was written for people who were in confusing times, who were unclear about their future, who needed to rebuild their lives and didn't know how. They could not lean on the past. There was no joy in the present, and they had no idea about the future. They were suspended above time, and they needed to know what to do. And I suspect that for many of us here this morning, we are living in that time of limbo ourselves. For this past week, there has not been any great victories. There have been no great defeats. But there is still that concern about what happens tomorrow. What do we do in those difficult relationships in our lives? What do we do about those difficult decisions that we face? Or those great concerns that we have that we don't know where to turn? Many of us are facing those situations now. We want to know how to live our lives for today, but also to prepare for the future. And so this was the predicament that the Israelites were in then. And the prophet Isaiah decided that for them, in their confusing times, there was one image that they needed to hold dear. That God was their mother, comforting them, bringing them the comfort that they needed. And the passage is incredibly clear that the image for us in this time of limbo is that God is a nurturing and comforting God as well. As a mother comforts her children, God says, so I will comfort you. I will bring you comfort. How does God bring us comfort in this time? How does God act in a way that the Scriptures call motherly towards us? There was a book written called Innocent Wisdom by a woman named Joanne Taylor, and she made it a point of interviewing children and asking them about their perceptions of God. She interviewed little Ellen one day, and through the course of the discussion, she learned that Ellen believed that God was male, was a man, like Jesus, but a strict and loving teacher. But that's not all, Joanne learned. Because Joanne asked little Ellen, "Have you ever felt comforted by God? Ellen, have you ever felt comforted by God?" And Ellen said, "Well, I think that when my mother comforts me, God is working through her." Beautiful. God relates to us in motherly ways. Not just as a great and mighty king, not just as a warrior or as a shepherd, but in these times of limbo, of confusing times, when we need answers that aren't there, when we have more questions than there are answers, God is there to bring us comfort. And how is it that God does that? I think there are three ways. Three ways that we can think of God working with us as our mothers worked with us when we were children. The first is, God is attentive. God is not distracted by all of the billions of other children in the world. God has a great listening ear and knows our every whimper, our every whisper, our every cry. God knows what we need when we need it. God is always available to us. As a child is to his or her mother, so are we to God. We are God's top priority in everything. God is attentive to us as a mother is to her children. Second, God has a gentle touch. God strokes our brow with a loving hand. And we feel that touch in so many ways throughout our days, whether we are aware of it or not. Through the sights and sounds of nature, through the gentle words of a caring friend, through those events in our lives that remind us that indeed we are being touched by a nurturing God. We find God's gentle touch through the words of our scriptures when we look through them and find comfort in our lives. We feel God's gentle touch when we are here in this church singing songs of praise and assurance. We feel God's gentle touch when we go to God in prayer and know there is someone who is listening to us. It is God's gentle hand stroking our brow and granting us comfort. And finally, God has provided us a loving family. For we are all related, and God is our loving parent. And in these times, it is important to know that we are related to one another, and we must depend on one another to give and receive comfort and encouragement and assurance, to give words of advice, words of care, because God has it that we all act as a family. And though there might be little sibling rivalries here and there, little kicks under the dinner table, sometimes playful, sometimes not, we must remember that God is our parent, and we are all brothers and sisters. And for that, we must give and receive comfort to each other. God is attentive. God is a gentle touch. God has given us brothers and sisters. What a great God we have. In these times when we need assurance, in these times of uncertainty about the future, God comforts us. And what a better way, what better way to celebrate that amazing word than here, at the front of the church, at the communion table. In just a few moments, we will be celebrating the Lord's Supper and remembering a time when Jesus Christ gathered his family together and shared with them the bread and the wine, reminding them that though he would not be there in a few days, there was a way to remember him. And remember that God brings comfort and care to those who need it. Let the image of the bread and the wine and the gathering of the family at the front of the church remind you that you are not alone, for God is with you. Let the bread and the wine remind you that with all of the concerns you bring to this place today, there are those around you. We indeed serve and love a comforting God. In the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sustainer of us all. Amen.